Bring the meeting to order, please. Can I get a roll call?
Kurt Alsted.
Here.
Tracy Carluccio.
Here.
Tim Daugherty.
I thought I saw him.
He's here.
He is here. There you go. Cookies in hand.
Okay. Michael Dressler.
Here.
Michael Francis. Robert Holtaway.
Here.
Bruce James.
Here.
Paul Richko.
Here.
Jim Riley.
Here.
Michael Savatich.
Here.
Michael T. Fink.
Here.
James Vizioli.
Here.
Richard Bowden.
Here.
Robert Walton.
Here.
Please read the Open Public Meeting Statement.
This meeting is being held in accordance with the Open Public Meetings Act. The Highlands Council sent written notice of the time, date, and locations of this meeting to newspapers of circulation throughout the state and posted notice on the Highlands Council website.
Thank you. Can you please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance and remain standing afterwards?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
You may be standing, please. I just wanted to take a moment of silence for a member of the Highlands Council, the Highlands staff, that passed away last week unexpectedly. And she was a very good employee and a very nice person. His name is Chris Ross. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, could I just say a couple of quick words about Chris?
I'd love to.
Thank you. Chris worked here since 2007. She was principal and part of writing the regional master plan. She was devoted to the Highlands Council, and she was a good friend and a great staff member. She was very important in writing the comprehensive mitigation plan for the PSE&G project that ultimately led to our open space program and our HDC purchase program, and she will be sorely missed both today as a friend and as a staff member here. Thank you.
At this point in time, we'll move on to approval of Highlands Council minutes June 15. Your motion, please.
So moved.
Second. Thank you. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alsted.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis. Councilmember Holtaway.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Abstain.
Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Savatich.
Yes.
Councilmember Tifang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Here.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. Next, it goes to the Chairman's Report. This evening, we have a presentation for the New Jersey Statewide Water Supply Plan. With us today is Dan Kennedy from DEP. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the Council, thank you for allowing us to come up here and spend some time presenting this material to you. So my name is Dan Kennedy, Assistant Commissioner for Water Resource Management at the DEP. In that capacity, I manage the Divisions of Water Quality, Water Supply and Geoscience, and Division of Water Monitoring Standards, and quarterback a lot of the external relationships with the department that revolve around water. So to keep it short, Jeff Hoffman is our state geologist. He's going to run through with you a lot of the details. We have been throughout the state the last week or so presenting this draft plan to the public at public meetings, and are still within the public comment period where we're accepting written comments. Jeff will walk you through those opportunities for public comment at this point. This plan's been a long time coming, and this represents the first major revision of the water supply plan since the mid-90s. So there's been a lot of chatter on this plan, and we're here to talk to you what it's all about. All right? So, bye. Thank you.
Mr. Hoffman, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. As Dan mentioned, my name is Jeff Hoffman. I am the New Jersey State Geologist. I'm also an assistant director in the Division of Water Supply and Geosciences. Under my purview is both the geological survey people and also the Bureau of Water Allocation and Well Permitting. We do a lot of interacting with Highlands Council staff in terms of well permitting and allocation. We coordinate closely with staff on issues of where wells go and increasing allocation permits in the Highlands region. There's a lot of back and forthing between my staff and the council staff, and so we know each other pretty well there. So moving on, this is the New Jersey Water Supply Plan 27-2022, and this is the draft plan. We're coming out with this draft. The comments for public, opportunities for public comment extend through tomorrow, close of business, and there's a handout which I gave to all council members with an email address. There's also a website on there. You can download the plan on that website. This presentation is also available on that website, so you can download it and look at it later if you'd like to. Many of the pictures from the plan are on poster boards around the room in a little larger form for a little closer inspection. Thank you for this opportunity to share the draft plan and to get your comments on what we found and the directions of this draft. Moving forward, this plan is presented under the authority of the 1981 New Jersey Water Supply Management Act that called for periodic releases and revisions of the plan. The first plan came out in 1982. There are a number of updates after that, 83, 85, 87, 91, and 93. The first major new one came out, updated that, came out in 96, a minor update in 03. Those are the first major updates since then. The requirements of the Act say that the plan must identify surface and groundwater sources along with current demands, make demand projections for the duration of the plan, identify land purchased for water supply facilities that might get used for that purpose, and then make a series of recommendations on improvements, new constructions, interconnections, diversions for aquaculture, legislative and administrative actions to protect watershed areas, to identify and purchase land for water supply facilities, and last, what administrative actions does the DEP need to take to protect surface and groundwater supplies. So this plan emphasizes the need to balance traditional water use with water use protection. We understand quite well that there are a wide range of policy options and a wide range of competing interests, and this plan is charged with balancing those competing interests to the benefit of both the citizens of the state and the ecology of the state. It differs from preceding plans as it's designed to allow for continuous technical policy updates as we get more data and as policy changes. Well, in short, you want to make it a living plan. And then the intention is to release this and all updates to the DEP's website. The end goal is a tool to guide the management, regulation, conservation, and development of the state's water resources. That's what we're trying to do. So jumping into what we found so far, this graph here, shows total water withdrawals 1990 to 2015. On this graph, the dark blue is surface water, which was about 77% of withdrawals. The medium blue is unconfined groundwater at 16%, and the light blue is around 7%. This is total withdrawals for all uses. We can break it out into withdrawals by use group. This graph shows the same time period withdrawals by use group. In this case, the gray bar here is power generation, blue is potable use, green is agriculture and irrigation, and the reddish one is up here is commercial industrial mining. Total withdrawals peaked about 1.1 trillion gallons in the early 2000s. The biggest change you can see visually on this graph is the change in power generation water demands. The demands for hydropower generation can vary greatly from year to year. Also, recently, there have been big changes in the changeover from coal-fired power plants to gas-fired power plants. Gas plants use much less water than coal-fired plants. So that change has made a big difference in from 2010 on. As an example, in just south of Trenton is a Duck Island power plant that was a PSE&G coal-fired plant that used about 200 billion gallons of water a year. That was water taken in, they used the water, they heated up a little bit and put the water back in the river. So it was not a consumptive use, but that has gone away. That plant is now closed, and PSE&G does not intend, as far as I understand, to reopen in the near future. So the big drop in power generation demands of water. This graph is only of freshwater withdrawals. DEP is not allowed to regulate saltwater withdrawals. are saline water withdrawals. So the big withdrawals by the two nuclear power plants in New Jersey are not accounted for in this graph. The fluctuations in power generation kind of mask what's going on in the other sectors. If we strip out power generation, just look at the other, again, the same color scheme. This dark blue here is potable use, and then the other uses are the same colors. This peaked around 650 billion gallons a year in the late 1990s, and the demand has dropped off to around 550 billion gallons in that order over the past few years. Actually, set do the math here. In the past, from 2011 to 2015, an average of 5-10 billion gallons a year was drawn in New Jersey for uses. Of that, 80% was for potable, 11% was for commercial industrial mining, and 7% for agriculture/irrigation. Now, this is total withdrawals taken out of the resource. Now, we have to introduce some concepts of water use in Jersey, and that is consumptive versus non-consumptive. When we use consumptive water loss, we mean evaporated. So water is taken out, some water is evaporated, but then most water is put back into the system. If you look at just consumptive loss over New Jersey, this is a graph over the same time period, how much water is lost. Of 510 billion gallons used, 76 billion gallons was evaporated. So the remainder was put back into the ecosystem for use by other, by downstream users or returned to the ocean. So the difference is that's the non-consumptive part. This is the consumptive part, 76 billion gallons. Of this use, 58%, 45 billion gallons, was attributed to potable use by the citizens of the state. About a third, 34%, associated with agriculture irrigation, and about 8% with industrial commercial mining. The big change here is that you can see ag went from only 7% of total use to about 34% of consumptive use. And that makes sense. I mean, the agriculture irrigation sector takes water out for the purpose of giving it to the plants, and the plants then take it up and use it and evapotranspire. So that makes sense that percentage has increased. It's still 25 billion gallons is less than the water lost by the potable use, but as a percentage, it's increased. Let's go back a second. This one, that's the previous screen. This number here is annual average over this time period, 2011, 2015. We can break that out into monthly values. Now, this is only the potable use. So this shows for potable use by month, we've peaked around a little over 50 billion gallons a month in 1999 and lower since then. But on this graph, the blue shows non-consumptive water use. That is water delivered to the citizens of the state. The citizens use it and then return it back to the ecosystem. Either if you are in a sewer service area, it goes back to a sewage treatment plant and then treated to standards and is discharged. Or if you're a domestic well, it goes into the septic tank and then is returned to the groundwater. The orangish bar here is consumptive water loss, which shows how much water is evaporated on a monthly average. On a monthly basis, rather. This graph shows that shows peaks for the summer. In the summer, up as much as a third of the water delivered to the citizens of the state as potable water is evaporated to the atmosphere. That's a huge number. There's a strain on the system when supplies are most needed, and sometimes when the ecosystem also most needs the water. On the other hand, it is an opportunity for more efficient use of surface water, of water in New Jersey, rather. So if we take all that potable water demand, if you look at just the potable sector, we can see how has that changed over time. The actual blue bars we showed before on an annual basis didn't change a whole lot in 1990-2015, whereas there have been more citizens in New Jersey over that time period. If you actually calculate the potable water demand per capita, that's gone down in the state. It was around 155 gallons per day per person in 1990, has declined to around a little under 130 gallons per day per capita in New Jersey. That's mainly due to diminished indoor usage with more efficient plumbing fixtures in the state. But now that's total water use. So that's all the water delivered to the citizens of the state. That's not consumptive loss, which is what we're concerned, which are sometimes we're more concerned about. Here is average annual numbers of consumptive loss in the state It's a much lower number. So on an average annual basis, we're evaporating between 10 and 19 gallons per acre per person. This is not seasonal, not monthly. So again, we're assuming that most of this actually occurs in the summer and not in the winter. On this graph, the peaks are associated, the high consumptive loss is associated with dry summers. People are irrigating their lawn more, and they're losing more water evaporation. And the low years are the wetter years when there's less evaporation, less lawn water going on. So there, if you try to fit a straight line to this graph, there is hard to fit a straight line through it. However, what I find very interesting is that the very low values down here, the slight increase in the lows, which indicates that even in the wet years, we're using more water up. So this might be an increase in lawns, acres of lawns in New Jersey. We're seeing a slight increase in total, I think we're seeing increase in consumptive loss during the wet years, which is, that's a concerning trend that we really need to address. So moving on, the plan wants to evaluate a number of different things. In terms of water availability, we're going to look at consumptive losses, which we showed you some slides before. Next, we want to look at what we call depletive or accretive gains. The goal here is that for each of the watersheds, we're looking at 151 HUC 11 watersheds. For each watershed, we want to develop a water budget. How much water is coming in? How much water is going out? Of the water coming in, how is it used? In that context, we're calling it a depletive loss as water being exported from a HUC 11 watershed. The water could be exported as potable water to a user in a nearby HUC 11, or it could be wastewater exported to a nearby sewage treatment plant in HUC 11. Either way, this water is lost to the HUC 11 and no longer available to that HUC 11 for use. The other side of that coin, though, is that accretive gains. If you are in a HUC 11 that's being supplied by potable water from a nearby HUC 11, it's an import to you. That's a gain to your HUC 11. If you have a sewage treatment plant in your HUC 11 and you're getting sewage being shipped in and being treated to standards of discharge, that's a gain. We're doing a budget here, trying to track water, where it's generated, where it's used, where it's discharged. And so by that account, we're trying to find out the total water, call it a cycle of total water use in New Jersey. Based on those numbers, then, we want to determine which areas that have exceeded or in danger of exceeding our planning thresholds. In short, we're doing a total resource availability of water supply in the state. New Jersey is a water-rich state overall. We get 38 to 51 inches per year. This area of the state gets the most in an average year, 50 or more inches of rain. South Jersey, it tends to be as much as 10 inches a year less than an average year. In a drought year, this number can drop by 4 or 5 inches in a normal drought year. In the North Jersey, as you well know, there are a number of topographic areas that are conducive to reservoirs. That's why the reservoirs are in North Jersey, not in South Jersey. You have the hills, you have the valleys up here that made it possible. In southern New Jersey, though, they don't have the hills, but they have deep, confined aquifers that are a major water source. So all of these sources we try to keep track of. In essence, one way to imagine this is think of the water supply of New Jersey as a bucket. And we have water coming out of the bucket, the supply to the citizens of the state. And we look at it, there are three smaller buckets pouring into this larger bucket. First bucket is reservoirs, next is confined aquifers, and the last is the surface water and unconfined aquifers, which is a joint bucket. I'll discuss why that is. But first, we'll talk about reservoirs. It's a graph of reservoirs in northern and the northern coastal plain, where they are. This is a picture here of the Wanakee Reservoir earlier this spring. I happened to be up there like about 2 days after it filled after the social center out. And I was so glad to see the reservoir spilling at that time. It was had been down, I believe, 10 feet at worst over the winter, more than 10 feet. So I was very glad to see that. But every reservoir has what's called a safe yield. That's the amount of water the reservoir can supply in a repeat at the worst drought of record. It's an example, it's our analysis of how much water you can safely take out of that reservoir. Every reservoir is allocated by my people, by staff, to deliver a certain amount of water. And the purveyors can contract for that amount. They're not allowed to contract for a greater amount of water than the safe yield. And that's our way to make sure they don't overpromise water from that reservoir. Because if they did during a drought, that water may not be there. So that's one way we make sure they don't overdeliver, overpromise rather. That's bucket number one, the surface water reservoirs and safety belts. Bucket number two is confined aquifers. In southern New Jersey, this is a cross-section to the New Jersey coastal plain. We have Camden up here, Delaware River on the right-hand side, Atlantic Ocean of Atlantic City. There are a series of geologic units which dip from the northwest to the southeast. On this graph, the green layers here are confining units. These are sands and clays which don't transmit groundwater very well. The interbetween there, the clear areas, are aquifers. These do transmit water to wells. And some of these are extremely prolific, providing thousands of gallons per minute to wells in them. A well drilled at some points down vertically can pass through three or four different aquifers at a location. These lower units are separated from the surface by a long travel time. Down Atlantic City, we dated the water from wells in Atlantic City, and that water was about 10,000 years old. So it's a very old water recharge a long while ago. Other confined aquifers have water that's on the order of decades to a few centuries old. But these are a major resource that's not much impacted by short-term droughts or wet periods at the surface. So we try to track these as its own separate resource. However, they can be overpumped. And when you overpump them, especially the ones near the ocean, then you threaten to bring in salt water from the ocean side. So in southern New Jersey, we have instituted what's called Water Supply Critical Area 1 and Critical Area 2, in which we have limited withdrawals from the confined aquifers. And that's been a rather successful program. This is from a well in Monmouth County in the Englishtown Aquifer. Before the critical areas were involved, this line here is about 200 feet below sea level, so very low water levels. After the critical area program was instituted, water levels climbed by about 120 feet increase. So it's still about 80 or so feet below sea level, which is a concern, but it's not nearly as much a concern as it was 20 years ago at this time. This is a water supply program that was taken to protect the water resources of this bucket, so not overdraft the confined aquifers in South Jersey. The next bucket, which is the combined surface water unconfined aquifer system. The reason we treat this as a joint system is that if there's no wells at all, water would recharge the land surface. Water that didn't run off, rather, would recharge the land surface, go into the unconfined aquifer, the water table aquifer, and then flow eventually sideways and discharge to streams or to wetlands near the stream. When you put a well in, that well, when you pump the well, can intercept water that otherwise flow to the stream, and in some cases, it may even pull water from the stream. So the stream, in either case, might be diminished by having less water flowing to it, or diminished by having water come directly out of it. So this is why we decided that intakes on streams and withdrawals from the unconfined aquifer, we're going to treat that as one common resource, one bucket of water. So how do you define how much water is there? For reservoirs, you have safe yield. For confined aquifers, we have all these estimates of how much water you can take out sustainably from the aquifers. However, from this resource, it's a little harder to do. What we're doing is what's called the low flow margin, which is, I know that the Highlands is using a version of this. And we have our own version of it. But basically what we're doing is that this is a stream from North Jersey, Westbrook. This is a small stream. The black line here is, I've lost the display. Oh, there it is. Okay. This black line is monthly median flow in terms of CFS. So in a given month, over the time period of analysis, half the flows that month were greater and half the flows were smaller than that. So as you can see, we have high flows in the spring, which everyone knows. In New Jersey, for most streams in New Jersey, September is a month with the lowest median flow. For most streams in New Jersey, September is the driest month, the lowest stream flows. So the low flow margin approach says, okay, we want to take the monthly median flow in September, this value right here. The red line on this graph is a 7Q10 flow, and that's the drought flow. On the average, that's a 10-day flow, a 7-day flow once a decade, roughly. What this approach says is that we're going to allow some water taken out of the stream, basically lower this monthly median flow by a little bit, but only by a percent of this low flow margin. We're going to define this difference as a low flow margin and withdraw a percent of that. We did a bunch of, this is all based upon what's called the ecological limits of hydrologic alteration. A bunch of USGS folks and academics did a lot of research and came up with the acronym ELOHA to define this ecologically based approach. If you modify stream flows too much, you modify the ecology. If you don't modify the stream flows a lot, then you don't modify the ecology a lot. So we did some analysis of using the ELOHA approach in New Jersey and found for water withdrawals, where you're taking out a relatively constant amount of water from the stream, if you take out 25% of low flow margin or less, we don't change the stream flows by too much. So that's going to be our threshold, our evaluation criteria, 25% of the low flow margin. We worked with USGS, and they gave us September median flows and 7Q10s at the base of every HUC 11 in New Jersey. The graph on the right shows the evaluation of how much water that is. Basically, we go back to the bucket analogy. For bucket number 3, the unconfined aquifer and the surface water system, how much water is in that bucket? And this analysis shows us that in South Jersey, there are some of these HUC 11s that have more than 10 million gallons per day you can take out of that HUC 11 and not modify stream flows by excessive amounts. In northern New Jersey, there are some that are in the range of 5.1 to 7.5, others 2.5 to 5, and yet more in the 0 to 2.5 range. So this is the amount of water we're saying is in this bucket. Again, we're only talking about this particular bucket, not the other ones. So but this analysis tells us how much water is in the bucket. So how much water is coming out of the bucket now? This is our analysis of how much water is being taken out of each of the bucket number 3, surface water, unconfined aquifer, during the analysis period we picked. That was 97-2008. That period includes the year of the most consumptive losses. Again, we showed you earlier that there were variations in consumptive losses over time. 2008 had the most consumptive loss up to then, so we chose that as a stress period. This is how much water is lost. The red here is losing more than 10 million gallons per day. Because this is a budget analysis, we have to track water where it comes from, where it's going to. There are some very large regional sewage treatment plants, STPs by the shore, that treat water discharge offshore. So we have to keep track of where that water goes offshore. So that's why we have these HUC-11s off the shore, just tracking where the water goes. It's interesting also that there are some of these blue HUCs onshore. These are HUC-11s that have sewage treatment plants in them. Basically, they are getting water shipped into them from nearby HUCs. Water is treated in the HUC and discharged to the surface water of that HUC, where it's then available for downstream users. So there are, if you think of it, there are some HUCs that are losing water, some HUCs that are gaining water. And from a budget analysis, you're trying to keep track of all that water moving across the state. So this graph on the right, now this shows what's causing all this loss. The yellow is the primary, the biggest source of the water loss is agriculture. The blue, biggest is potable. The green, the biggest is irrigation, which is non-agriculture irrigation. What I think is really interesting is, from a geologic point of view, is the purple HUCs. These are the HUC-11s where the biggest cause of water loss is actual leakage downwards. Remember I showed you for southern New Jersey, there are all these lower confined aquifers with confining layers, where the water levels in the lower layers have been overpumped, there are a lot of water taken out. They're actually pulling water down from this overlying water table aquifer. So in these purple HUCs, the biggest cause, not the only, but the biggest cause of water loss at current max rates is actual leakage to the underlying aquifers, where it's a source of water for those aquifers. It's recharged to them. So that water then is available for water use as a source from the confined aquifers. Okay, so we defined earlier how much water is in the bucket. We defined how much water is taken out of the bucket. How much water is left in the bucket? This graph shows that at 1972-2008 peak use rates, the amount of water left in the unconfined aquifer and surface water system using the evaluation criteria of 25% of low flow margin. And this is a state, we did the analysis statewide, out here in the Highlands, for those huts that are entirely in the Highlands, we did not show the result. The reason is that the Highlands regional plan has precedence up here. I mean, we work with the Highlands Council very closely, and it's the council has their own version of the local margin which they apply, and we use the, we're deferring to the council judgment on this area. So this shows peak use rates. On the right shows full allocation rates. If every curve area were to pump to the full allocation, what the result would be from this particular bucket. On this graph, this gray here is showing that using the evaluation criteria we defined before, 25% low flow margin, there would be these areas would not have additional water from that resource. As again, the site-specific limitations or availability can trump sometimes, but on a regional statewide planning basis, this is a start. This graph in the water supply plan kind of summarizes all of this for the state. Now, we're, in order to be a useful planning tool, we're rolling things up from the 151 HUC-11s to the 20 watershed management areas across the state. The first set of columns deal with the natural resource availability. Basically, for each of the buckets, reservoirs, surface water confined, and the confined aquifers, how much water is in each resource? The next set of columns defines how much water is being taken out of each resource right now. We try to define this because, especially for the reservoirs, we want to keep track of how much of the safe yield is currently used, taken up. How much of the safe yield of the reservoir still remains? So we don't want to start adding all these numbers up. We do in the last column. We want to keep track of how much of each bucket is taken out, basically. Keep getting on the water budget approach, keeping track of how much is there, how much is taken out, how much is left. The next set of three columns is how much water is left in each resource. Using this approach, we're showing that New Jersey has about 1.5 billion gallons per day, 1,520 million gallons per day. About 211 MGD remains unused. This is a statewide average number. So conditions in certain parts of the state will differ. There are parts of the state we know have little or not much water still available, and they rely upon imports coming into them. Other parts of the state have a lot of water available based on local resources. The net result is that we found there are four WMAs in which there's limited resource availability of what's still in that WMA. This is based upon the water budget approach of the 25% low flow margin and the resources in the WMA. We're trying to balance human needs with ecological functions, and we show that four of these we're concerned about. At full allocation, there are 11 more become stressed. New withdrawals in these watersheds, we're saying, must be thoroughly evaluated to determine possible impacts. We've been talking about raw water so far. By raw water, I mean water delivered to curve areas, water taken from the system, from the surface water, from the reservoirs before treatment. We can look at this map. This is a map looking at finished water now, looking at the towns of New Jersey, looking at their infrastructure, evaluate what's called the firm capacity, an analysis of how much water that infrastructure can deliver to the towns, and then compare that to anticipated growth of those towns. This graph shows those towns that are in red, light red, or are pink here. We are concerned that the infrastructure may not be suitable to supply all the anticipated growth in those towns. Now, that's a function of two things, their infrastructure and their growth. So if it grows less or grows more, that will change this picture. Infrastructure is also can be improved. You can improve the infrastructure through various processes, this picture could change over time. This is looking at the finished water system. We try to estimate future water demands based on population projections. Overall, the potable water trends have been relatively flat over the past 25 years, not a lot of change. Some up and down in wet years and dry years. We attribute that mainly to the more water-efficient fixtures. As populations grow, has gone up, people are using less water overall, thanks to that. We're working with Rutgers right now to develop more detailed population projections through 2040, and then much more detailed per capita use rates, and that's due later this year. So our objectives for planning and policy, identify and quantify the location of new sources of supply, including infrastructure needs, define the overarching water supplies in the plan, and then provide a support tool to inform and assist all the plans, local, regional, and state level, on possible options in certain areas. Conclusions is that water availability is a function of all water resources available to a specific area. Imports may be an important source of water to your area. Exports may be an important demand taking water from your area. And the last one here is seasonal consumptive water losses are a significant stressor. But there's opportunity there for increased efficiency if you can control it. We believe New Jersey has sufficient water available to meet needs into the near future, into the foreseeable future, with a big caveat there that we have to effectively manage the state's resources. We have very region-specific sustainability thresholds, especially in the Highlands, but also the Pinelands. There are also some watershed-specific concerns scattered around the state outside the Highlands and Pinelands. The plan presents 10 specific recommendations. The first involves promoting efficient use of the state's resource, encouraging water conservation, encouraging reductions outdoor water use, and then we're trying to limit the non-potable uses to non-potable water sources. We need to improve New Jersey's drought management capabilities and water system resilience. We have to promote optimized use of existing water supplies. The purveyors, especially in northeastern New Jersey, there's some opportunities for their using their interconnections to more efficiently manage their water sources. Conjunctive use means using different sources of water different times of the year as they are available. The last is what's called aquifer storage and recovery. There are some places in South Jersey with different water sources. They're able to pump water out from, say, inland and pump it to a barrier island and recharge it in the winter when there's not a lot of tourists there. In the summer, pump that water out to meet the tourist demand. We need to encourage new and expanded sources of supply and also encourage innovative technologies. These technologies can include desalination. Right now in Cape May County, they're pumping out brackish salt water and taking the salt out of it and turning it into potable water. We need to evaluate all new allocations and try to limit all high consumptive uses, and then coordinate with the Highlands and also the Pinelands. We have to analyze what we're doing. We need detailed hydrologic regional assessments to look at status and sustainability of resources, and also feasible water supplies. This is ongoing. We've been working closely with USGS over the past 30 years to do these. We need to keep working on these studies. We need to coordinate with the agriculture community to accurately assess their future ag demands. The state is committed to assisting water supply systems to ensure adequate financial investment to maintain, repair, rehab, replace, update their systems. This is a major part of asset management to make sure that the infrastructure of the state is maintained properly and is available for use into the future. The last recommendation in the plan is New Jersey has a dense network of stream gauges, reservoir gauges, water level monitoring wells, but it is not dense enough. We need more monitoring sites. It is expensive out of gathering those data. It's something that we can't manage it, we can't measure it. I think that the whole plan comes down to three basic points. First is use water wisely. The second is we have to manage the assets of New Jersey to make sure they are properly maintained and useful in the future, especially during times of stress, that they don't break during stress. And the last, we have to monitor and assess what we're doing to make sure we're taking the proper steps that are having the proper impact on the resource. What's next? At the time the draft plan came out, the 2014-15 data were draft. They've since been finalized and are now in the data set. We're analyzing data. We want to update the water availability, the total resource analysis, to look again at the reservoirs, confined aquifers, and the unconfined aquifers and streams, basically the three buckets again. We'll incorporate all the updated data and availability results of the plan. And last but not least, address all the comments we've received over the past month and will receive today and tomorrow. I handed out as a handout earlier, and on the back side of it, there's a whole series of reports available. These are from the website of njgeology.org. Basically, all the data in the water supply plan is available. The data are available. The data are online. You can download this data set and look at it. It's an access database, so you have to finagle it in some. We have the methods we're using, the low flow margin method is documented and then reported available at the site. We have a series of analysis tools available at this site too. The goal is that everything in the plan that we put out, someone could, if they wanted to, dig through the data and reproduce it. We had a series of public meetings last week in Central Jersey. We met at the Millburn Public Library last Wednesday and last Thursday at Stockton. Written comments on the plan are until close of business tomorrow. Please submit them to this email address, and this information is on the handout also. The entire plan, the 250-some pages, is available for download at this link. So thank you very much for your time. I look forward to hearing from the comments you make.
Thank you. Any council members with any questions?
One of the things that we get comments about is the losses in the infrastructure.
Yes.
Where does that appear? Is that in the consumptive losses?
No, that's not. Yeah, well, in a sense, yes. We count water delivered to the systems and water returned from the systems to the sewer treatment plants. So that would count as a loss or use of the system.
And power generation. Never quite understood why you counted the water as a use of power generation. They take it out here and they put it back about 20 feet away.
For most power generation, that's true. The thermal powers, the coal-fired plants, they do evaporate a little bit of the water, but it all has an allocation. And so from the permitting point of view, they have an allocation, they have to report their water withdrawals to the state. Because they report the water, it counts as a water use in our eyes. They're using the water. So the total water use counts for that. The consumptive loss is where we say they don't count there. The consumptive loss doesn't really consider that, but they're not an important part. It's interesting to note that if you go back historically at the Passaic River, there's what's called the Society for Useful Manufacturers, SUM. There's a big waterfall, Little Falls of Passaic, that drove from the late 1700s some large water turbines. And much of the water law in northeast New Jersey developed from those people at the SUM trying to preserve stream flow in the Passaic River to churn those water mills for the silk mills in Patterson and the other manufacturing centers. So they were very active in objecting to all consumptive water losses upstream to exports of water from upstream of the falls. They saw that as decreasing the water available to their power generation. So historically, much of New Jersey's water supply has been very concerned with maintaining the water available to the hydropower generators of the state.
Why did you decide to go with the HUC 11 rather than the HUC 14? I mean, we use the HUC 14 here at the council and the RMP. This is more accurate. We go to the HUC 11, it kind of masks what's really going on, and you miss all the highs and lows, just like when you look at an average, for instance.
Okay. There are two reasons for that. First is that, again, we're doing a statewide analysis. So trying to zoom in on a smaller HUC 14 scale, and there's 500 or 600 or so HUC 14s across the state. It just wasn't doable from a statewide analysis point of view. The second deals with service areas. I mean, a lot of the service areas of the state were supposed to be mapped, but they're not as accurate as we would wish. So on a HUC 14 basis, try and identify both the potable service areas and the sewer service areas. There are some inaccuracies about water delivery in those areas. On the HUC 14 scale, we felt those inaccuracies were large enough to throw that into question. On the HUC 11 scale, we felt it wasn't as bad. So basically, because we were concerned about the data accuracy at the more fine HUC 14 scales, we stuck with HUC 11 scale. We're pretty well certain of what the withdrawals are and the discharges are. But when you get to the overlying of the service areas, potable and sewer service areas, and water moving through one and into another, that crosses HUC 14 boundaries. So we weren't real sure about those. On HUC 11 scale, a little larger topographic divides there, we felt much better about that scale of analysis.
Isn't it really a matter of just being able to analyze accurately that data in order to look at it from a HUC 14 point of view, though? I mean, it seems the concern being that you could have stream go dry because it's over withdrawn in an area when you look at it at a HUC 11 level, doesn't show a problem.
At a planning scale, you're right. The HUC 11 analysis is designed to be a large-scale planning review. We look at these more local scales at the permitting review, at the allocation. When the allocation comes in, even say a HUC 11 has a lot of water available, if the allocation, proposed allocation is on a small stream, and we think that that will affect the stream adversely, we'll not give out the allocation or put a strict passing flow on so it can't. So that's a reduce withdrawals during dry times, low flow times. So those site-specific limitations we would address through the allocation part of the plan, not the water supply overall big picture part.
Just had another question. So you left the Highlands area, blank. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of developed data and a lot of information in terms of net water availability. Why didn't you just plug it in? I mean, realize there's a different planning scale, but
right.
Still.
I think the main reason is that we wanted one common data set for everything, one common analysis for our reporting out. And in that sense, we have to combine a different basis. The HUC 14s, it's true, HUC 14s roll off the HUC 11s, and we could have taken that data set, but we felt more comfortable using just our data for this purpose. We did not want to include the Highlands Council and Highlands data and give the impression that we were trying to usurp the authority.
So, as we're a part of the open comment period, that's if the council would like to make that comment, or any individual groups want to make that comment, that's a comment we would receive and absorb. It's a decision we made that's not dictated in the act, and we are taking comments right now. So, if you'd like to make that comment, that's one we've received and evaluated.
It doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to me.
Okay.
I think our staff heard some comments that are excellent.
That comment's in there.
So you'll be getting that tomorrow.
Okay. That's why
last minute, huh?
That's why we're here.
Yep.
The other council members?
How long is your open comment period?
Close the business tomorrow.
No, how long? What was the duration?
Was it? We extended it once by 2 weeks. It was about 2 months total. This plan came out in early May and until the end of July, basically.
Thank you.
That's 3 months.
I agree with Tracy that the comments made by our staff are excellent. Thank you very much. How will that be incorporated? You're just going to evaluate it and put into your report any comments that this council and individuals make? You're going to just evaluate them, or you're going to put everything?
Well, no, I think we, by the statute, are required to consult and collaborate with the Highlands, and I think this represents us going above and beyond that. So will we take everything and put it in? No. Everything we hear, we're going to hear different things because of the nature of the competing stakes in New Jersey around water. So we're going to take it in, make a policy call in terms of what should be updated and what shouldn't be, and then publish a final version. But I can guarantee you and commit to you that the comments we receive from the council will be highly regarded and highly considered.
One thing I didn't see in the report, and I know it could have an impact on future water resources in New Jersey, is climate change. Did you take that into consideration, anything with future resources because of climate change?
Sure. Jeff has a good technical answer, but I think I guess more of my policy answer, because I'm not the state geologist that prepared this. New Jersey has to consider a range of risks when it comes to our water supply, risks from drought, risks from unexpected breaks, various risks. And climate change was one of those risks that we considered in the development of the plan. But if your point is that we don't have a chapter on climate change, it's true, we don't have a chapter on climate change. We have a chapter on risk and kind of the unpredictable nature of water supply. And so Jeff has a more detailed answer for you for climate change, but we do consider the risks to the system.
Okay. So the detailed answer.
Can I ask your question or risk, please?
One second. Let's skip the answer.
The detailed answer is if you look at the most recent climate change models, they're predicting more wet periods, more dry periods. But on average, no change in net total rainfall for New Jersey. Other parts of the country, the world is different, but for New Jersey, not changing annual rainfall. So we have these big reservoirs in northern Jersey. And as long as they can capture the rain when it occurs, and they'll tide it over during dry periods. The confined aquifers in South Jersey are not going to be much affected. The question is going to be the third bucket, how's it going to change in terms of runoff ET? And that's a really hard question to answer. But I'm kind of comforted by the fact that the safe yield models of New Jersey are based upon a century's worth of rainfall. The major drought in the 1960s was evaluated as like being a 1 in 300 or 400 year drought. It was a very severe drought, extremely severe. We're not really anticipating that level of drought to occur a whole lot more frequently or be much more severe than that. So I think that our safe yields of the reservoirs are based upon a drought severity, which is consistent with what might occur in the future. So I think in that sense, the climate change is not going to affect the safe yield of the reservoirs. How will it affect stream flows? It might affect it some, but the low flow margin, 25%, is a very conservative estimate of water availability. But I think it's not going to be a huge change there. I could be wrong. We're very concerned about ET. There's an increase in growing season. It gets warmer sooner, stays warmer later. We're seeing people irrigate their lawns into October, which they didn't do 20 years ago. So that's a change in consumptive water loss in all these water systems. So there are a lot of components go into this. I think on the big picture side, we're good. On the small picture side, I think we have some policy calls to make.
Okay. But you said this is going to be a working, living document.
That's the goal.
So if that's the case, these could be addressed in 2 years, 3 years, 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Go ahead.
We have a lot of golf courses in New Jersey, and I spent a couple of weeks in Florida this past winter, and all they were talking about down there was the water allocations for golf courses. It's on the news, it's in the newspapers, and I didn't see anything in here about the allocations for water for the golf course. They use a tremendous amount of water. Is that part of your report about monitoring the amount that golf courses use?
Well,
especially the one in Bedminster.
Well, golf courses do have water allocations. And they do, yes. And we monitor, they have to report to the state how much water they withdraw overall. Now, we want to, as an outreach to the golf courses, we want to make sure they use as much water as they need, but not extra, basically. So encouraging them, but first, on the hand, golf courses are run by professionals who maintain their courses to a certain standards. And they don't overwater or underwater in that sense. So most golf courses actually are pretty efficiently run in terms of water use in New Jersey. They use water, there's no doubt. On the other half of your question, we are involved in outreach to have golf courses that are close to sewage treatment plants. Can you use reclaimed water to irrigate the golf courses? So we're trying to partner some golf courses to have reclaimed water from treatment plants being used to irrigate the lawn and the golf course instead of potable water or water that could be used for potable sources. So using that reclaimed water would be a beneficial use. Okay.
Mr. James?
Yeah, I'm just curious. You brought up risk, and there is a recent release report from the North Jersey Water Commission, which probably are aware of, and some of it's kind of disturbing, but it addresses what could be there is contamination from the Ringwood mines, the Ford Superfund site, went for dioxane and some other chemicals. So they were concerned, and they did their own study. They just released a report calling for the sea intrusion into groundwater and at the sources. So that will impact, if the worst case scenario comes to be, then it's going to impact dramatically, or could impact dramatically, the availability of water, period, from some of the key places, one of the reservoirs being one of them. So is anything being looked at when we're doing this water study of the contamination sites? We have one of the lakes, but the one in Ringwood is particularly troublesome. So are we even considering any of that, considering it's the Highlands and supplies have to stay with water?
We're coordinating closely with EPA and the North Jersey District and their staff. Very familiar with the report you're referencing, sir. And we've evaluated it, and A lot of it overlaps with information that's already been made public from EPA, and that the solutions there are a work in progress, but nothing that was released was news to us or sent off any alarm bells in addition to what we were already concerned with and paying attention to in the past. So does this plan address every single niche issue with
water supply? That's a hell of a niche. That's not just a niche. That's a hell of a problem.
Okay.
And I've read the report.
Yeah, so let me rephrase it.
Some of it was new and some of it surprised the commissioners because that's who I talked to. So I just think we should be aware that that can compromise a great deal of the water sources that we're talking about.
Right. We don't believe it's compromised at this point based on our evaluation. Our radar is up on the issue for sure. It has been before this report. And EPA is the one that's in charge of the site, and we're working closely with them as well. And we've coordinated very closely with all these parties. So I'll retract the niche comment, but I will say that not every single resource implication is considered in this statewide regional plan. That's for sure. So that's a very solid statement.
No, but I think we should be aware of it and consider it.
Yes, absolutely. I don't disagree at all.
Mr. Wilson?
Yeah. Has there ever been an application for water diversion that's been denied?
Yes.
What was the basis for that? Was it residential?
There are many reasons for denial.
And can you give us an example?
If a well is too close to another well, that will have an adverse impact on the first well. It can be denied. If it is in a sub-watershed which is stressed, and we feel that the withdrawal from the water table will cause lower stream flows, it will be denied. There was a case in South Jersey where a well actually went in, and we discovered it was drying up the swamp peak habitat nearby, and we withdrew that well. We withdrew the allocation, and that well closed. Allocations have been reduced or taken back because of groundwater pollution. When the well is polluted, the allocation may be taken back. But we'll often work with treatment to keep that source there. So there are a number of reasons that we can deny an allocation. Often when a request may come in for a certain amount of water, we'll work with the system and say, you're requesting, example, say 5 million gallons per day, but you have a loss in your system. You're showing you have on-account for water of a high percent. We think that if you were correct that, you only need like 3 million gallons a day. So we work with systems to reduce their demand before we would give the allocation out.
Have we done any kind of study to evaluate the economic impact of denials? Has there, for instance, been a situation where there's a brewery that wants to establish itself in New Jersey, they can't get the water diversion that they need to make their beer? Or is there a development of some particular tract for residential use that is denied because there's not suitable water available?
And the economic impact
from those denials?
I can't think of a systematic study looking at that in general.
No. And I think that in order to do that study, you'd have to identify projects that were exclusively denied because of water. And oftentimes, there's various infrastructure impacts of why projects do or don't happen. So
then that leads into my next question. You know, does it make sense for us to invest in our infrastructure to create more water supply? And is that a limiting factor to our ability to grow our economy in New Jersey in appropriate areas?
Yes. That's why we added one of the strategies in there to basically invest in our infrastructure. The EIT system is one of our leading drivers for investment in water infrastructure in the state. And I'm proud to say that this year we've surpassed $500 million of very low interest loans and grants to improve existing water infrastructure in the state. And then very limited opportunities for infrastructure that actually goes out into areas that don't have some level of infrastructure already. But I think there's water in the state. It's a matter of getting it to where it needs to be. Interconnections, conjunctive use, all these sorts of opportunities, and also partnership with the private sector. There's investments that go on in the state outside this year of the public investment. Private industry is willing and does make major investments in infrastructure and upgrades, and they want predictability, that's a big part of the story of us working with them from a permitting perspective, giving them a predictable environment to work in, And oftentimes, they're willing to make investments to see that private economic future see through if there's not infrastructure in place right now.
Has your study looked at the capability of us increasing capacity in our existing reservoirs? Are any of the reservoirs capable of being enlarged? Or are they so totally landlocked that a 10-foot increase is impossible? Part of the study?
Some of the dams were built originally with the possibility of being increased later, of heightening the dams. So that comes into the engineering analysis. That's not part of our analysis of increasing the safe yield. We were taking the safe yield of the reservoir as is and not assuming it's going to be increased. We could add that. We could talk to the dam engineers, our purveyors, and find out what's there.
One of the areas that is identified as required by the statute is identification of opportunities for new reservoirs in the state. And there are opportunities of land the state has bought and also land the state could acquire in the future or work on to develop additional reservoirs. None of them as large as some of the reservoirs you have up here in the Highlands, but there are new opportunities for reservoirs throughout the state that the plan identifies as opportunities. And it doesn't go much further than that, but it does identify.
What would trigger it? Would it be strictly a public investment, or would it be water company investment? Or
well, in some cases, it's a willing seller if it's not currently state-owned property. There are resources that probably would be those type of opportunities, of willing seller opportunities for the type of land that would geologically support a reservoir, and those type of properties aren't everywhere.
Two things. The price for a new reservoir, the plan does address what we call the Kingston Quarry. In Kingston, New Jersey, just north of Princeton, there is a large basalt quarry right now. The plan is when they are done quarrying, it will be a water supply reservoir with water pumped from the nearby Millstone Reservoir. It could then release water back to the Millstone or the DNR Canal. But that plan has been on the books for a number of years, decades. And they may keep quarrying for decades to come. But the plan is when they're done, that will be turned into a water supply reservoir. Maybe not for our grandchildren, but maybe our great-grandchildren will be involved with designing that. So that's on the books as a project in the future. We are also very involved with trying to have our purveyors in Northeast New Jersey coordinate their operations more. We have a lot of interconnections. And in the past, the purveyors were less likely to supply water to each other on a regular basis. We're trying to increase the conjunctive use of their resources by interacting more. We have developed some new models of surface water in New Jersey, of the reservoirs and demand patterns, and the purveyors are using a common platform to look at their demands, and there's some very good steps in the past several years. And that, by more efficiently using their resources, it's a net effect, net benefit to the resources of the state.
One final question. I know you're anxious, Tracy. Is there any mention in the language of your proposed plan that supports user-based fees to pay for purchase of loss of development opportunities for folks in the Highlands?
At this point, no.
Would you consider the inclusion of that type of language if it were proposed?
I'll pass to him.
We'll consider the comment, but that's a policy decision above our heads.
So one of the frequent complaints that we hear at the council is that 13 years ago, development rights were stripped from this area in deference to preserving the water resources of the region for the 5 million people that live east of here. And for the almost million people that live here, they're saying, why are we being asked to shoulder the burden of the cost of water infrastructure for everybody else? Maybe we wouldn't mind so much if we were at least provided with just compensation for the loss of our development rights. But we were never asked. We didn't have a choice. Our local legislators voted against it, but we were a minority, and here we are. It's sort of like the old Soviet bloc where the cows... the cow's getting fed on one end, but getting milked at the other, and the milk's all flowing to eastern New Jersey. And so we've been advocating for years for water user fees. We The Act talks about conservation of water in the Highlands area. And there's an excess of water here if it was kept here. And it's all being exported out, so the people who live here are in effect the colonies supporting the mother country. That really is sort of the reality. If we were just supporting ourselves in the Highlands, we wouldn't have a problem. But because we're net exporters, without getting paid for it, there's a lot of people who are a little bit angry. Like, look at those two old-timers behind you. They're smiling right now.
Another Civil War.
But in all seriousness, though, the issue is a lack of compensation. It's been promised for 13 years. You know, never comes about. It seems so simple. Add a couple pennies onto the water, to the cost of water, and fund, and give us funding for our TDR bank, which we have nothing in right now, basically. It's so easy to fix this, but there isn't any willingness to just do it.
So in an effort not to overcommit, the best this plan could do is recommend it to the legislature.
Let's do that.
Well, so your role is to comment to us, and our role, as I said before, take it seriously. So I imagine in the last 13 years, conversations like this in this room have been had before. I pay attention to regional planning issues statewide as someone who's been in this field for about 20 years now in New Jersey, so I understand what you're getting at, and we're listening.
Yeah.
Just a question. What Mr. James brought up, I think, leads to a sort of a bigger issue, which also intersects with the question of climate change, and that is the impact on water quality issues, problems that we have in terms of water quality with the availability of water. And I'm just wondering how hard you looked at that, and the fact that what we have available to use for potable water supply is diminished by water pollution. And the issues, for instance, of salinity intrusion as a result of sea level rise, as a result of climate change. Or, on the flip side of that, the value of the Highlands waters to provide fresh, healthy flow so people can drink and have good water. Just those issues of water quality and how they impact the availability of water. Did you look at that, or are you really just looking at volume?
This plan and the previous water supply plans have focused on volumes of fresh water coming in. The water supply plans do not look at changes of water quality of the resources. It's not a tool to use for that point. Your comments have been made a number of times in doing this comment period. I understand it. My answer to that would be there are a whole series of DEP programs designed just to do that. There are water quality management plans, the water monitoring programs designed, all the pollution programs in the DEP are designed to protect and preserve the water quality of the state. From that point of view, the water supply plan is focused on the water quantity aspects, and as such, it is 250 pages. I think to add water quality would more than double its size, probably quadruple it, to address all these other plans. I've been trying to figure out how to address those concerns. At the minimum, we're going to add a chapter or section saying DEP addresses these with these resources, the 305B, 303D lists, the groundwater exemption areas, the pollution for prey plants, a number of other programs DEP runs, and EPA, to maintain the resources of the state. So as of right now, the water supply plan addresses quantity, not quality.
Also, local government and regional governments do that as well. So local governments and regional governments play a big role in protecting water quality as well, not just the DEP.
One last question about the use of water. So does it inform the policies, the regulations? I mean, how does it actually, where does the rubber meet the road?
Right. So we didn't give you a quiz on all the science after we started talking, but really the policies are developed based on the science. So for example, if we felt that there wasn't sufficient water statewide, there would be strong recommendations in here to reform our regulatory program to ensure that that water resource is available in the future. That was not our finding. So you don't see recommendations in here for additional regulations on our water supply. You see recommendations about water conservation, improvements to our water infrastructure. So the science absolutely informs the policy recommendations in the report.
Which then affects what, appropriations or regulations or water allocation permits? Or
discretionary funding. No, there's a heck of a lot that we do that we don't need the plan to tell us to do. We already do it. And things are going well. You see that the numbers are going down in a lot of ways. Some of the peak water use times are past us. So some of the actions that have been taken in the past are working. Sometimes they take time to work. So I'm not embarrassed to say that part of this plan is stay the course. We've done some smart things in the past, and let's continue to do them. And over time, those things pay dividends.
I'll point out that the critical area program in South Jersey, 1 and 2, they are basically water supply planning tools for those areas. We saw very large drawdowns in confined aquifers. We instituted reductions in barrel withdrawals. The result has been dramatic increases in water levels and a preservation of the resource. So that was that. So there are planning activities taking place that are not all of them listed in the water supply plan.
So since you have sufficient water available, Mr. Kennedy, I guess New Jersey's going to stop arguing with New York and all the other states that they want all water from the Delaware River?
We have sufficient water statewide. But in that region that would benefit from the diversion from the DNR Canal could use additional resources. So New Jersey will continue to advocate for its rights that it was gained under the Supreme Court decree in the 1950s. Yes, absolutely. We'll continue to fight for that water.
Any other council questions? Well, thank you both very much for coming.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, we look forward to hearing your comments. Maybe working with the staff, and I'm sure we'll be back one day.
Thank you.
Submitting our comments until this meeting. We knew we had an extra day, but we can append it to what we have.
Barbara, could you have people talk a little mic up?
Okay.
Have people talk a little bit louder. I can't hear what you.
What?
Now we'll go to the Executive Director's Report.
Thank you. I just have a few things to cover. You will notice under the HCC Bank Credit Allocation Purchase Update, we've really seen an increase an interest in our program, and I also wanted to mention that we submitted our application for the next round of funding from the Highlands Conservation Act. That's the federal funding. So that went in on June 29th. We're hoping to get another $2.4 million for landowner equity. In municipal issued exemptions, we had another bunch come in from Califon, one exemption 5, Harmony Township Warren, one issued, PacCon Borough, one exemption 5, Montville Township, another exemption 5, and one exemption 2, Mount Olive, an exemption 6, one issued, exemption 4, one issued, exemption 2, one issued, and in West Milford Township, exemption 5, 6 were issued. What you have in front of you in terms of the MPRR, that is the latest version. We had corrected a lot of typos and had it reprinted. However, I will say that Councilmember Carluccio found 2 typos in our meeting at 3 o'clock, so it is now outdated as well, but we're not going to redo it again until the final version. And one last thing, as you can tell, last week was just a very, very difficult week for all of us here, and I have a statement I'd like to read into the record on behalf of our staff and myself. Chris Ross, as many of you know, was a senior resource management specialist at the Highlands Council for 11 years. Her specialization was aquatic ecology, and her role involved reviewing proposed projects for alignment with the natural resource protections outlined in the regional master plan. She also served as municipal liaison for several towns, working with professional planners to help ensure those protections are integrated with local planning and regulatory documents. Originally from Monmouth County, Chris loved the Jersey Shore and for many years commuted more than an hour to lend her passion for protecting this great garden state to the New Jersey Highlands. She was a strong advocate of the regional master plan and believed deeply in the mission of this agency. Staff here tell me that over the years, the more time she spent in the Highlands, the more she became part Jersey Shore girl, part Highlands girl, eager to explore all North Jersey has to offer. Beyond her professional achievements, Chris was a delight to be around. Anyone who had the pleasure of working with her knows that work was made easier by her positive disposition and focus on getting things done. Her contributions to this organization in both a professional and personal capacity were significant, and she will be greatly missed. Thank you.
Next item up is the RMP Amendment Committee. I believe we're going to hold this.
Yes.
Next is Budget and Finance Committee.
Before we go on, when we just announced that people in the audience were going, like, what's going on, maybe it should be explained.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, this is the consideration of resolution authorizing council staff to conduct the 5+1 public hearings before the procedure for considering proposals to amend the Highlands Regional Master Plan can be adopted as an addendum to the Highlands Regional Master Plan. Remember, we voted on this back in January.
Yes.
We approved this concept, and this is just putting it forward into the 5+1.
I understand all of this. Just people in the audience were looking like, why is it being pulled?
Quite frankly, I thought it should have gone forward, but because everything got out late, probably didn't get a chance to see it. That's why.
That's what they suggested. I agree with it being pulled.
That now brings us to Budget and Finance Committee.
We have three issues this evening to address. One is the establishment of a temporary budget. We do this every year, and the proposal is to continue our budget spending for the months until we adopt the final budget at the same average monthly spending level as the 2017 budget. It's 200 and some thousand. Do we have an exact number?
Yes, for the general operating budget, the average monthly spending level is $205,994.80, and the average monthly spending of the grants budget is $25,298.65. And we expect to adopt the formula. We learned last year that it was a good number to put in the resolution, and we expect to adopt the budget at the October meeting.
So, any questions from anybody relative to that?
So now we'll address the first resolution, approval to extend the fiscal year budget to 2017 at the same average monthly spending level. At this point in time, I'll open it up to the public that wishes to comment on this item and this item only. Please raise your hand.
Yes, sir.
I have one question for you. How about the rent on this building? Is that in this budget?
Yes.
You're paying the rent out of the state, or is the state paying the rent?
We now pay the rent directly.
You pay your rent out of the 205?
Yep.
And what is it?
What is the rent here?
It's about $20,000 a month.
How much?
Around $20,000 a month.
Right here.
Can I get a motion?
I'll move it.
Get a second, please.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Alston.
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Francis. Councilmember Holtzman.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richko.
Yes.
Councilmember Sabatich.
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefang.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Wolf.
No.
Chairman Ryan.
Yes. That brings us to the next resolution. approval of water use and conservation management plan and stormwater program development funding for the township of Denville, Morris County. Bart, do you want to?
Yes. I can explain, or you can do it, Bob. This is for an amended plan conformance grant agreement. Township of Denville completed their basic plan conformance activities accepted by the council on January 20, 2011, but they never asked for nor received any grant funding for the implementation of plan conformance. Executive Order 114 requires that they now complete a water use and conservation management plan. Council resolution for this grant funding is not to exceed $85,000 for these implementation requirements. As this is a reimbursement grant, no funding is released without staff review or an approval of associated deliverables.
Can I get a motion on it?
I'll second.
And a second. At this point in time, I'll open it up to the public. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on this item only? Yes, ma'am.
Julia Summers, Executive Director of New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Denville, a town where the entirety of the town is in the planning area, except I think it's about 6 acres, have made it very clear they had no intention of conforming to the regional master plan. Are you telling us that they have changed that position?
No, they don't intend to conform to the planning area. However, Executive Order 114 requires them to implement a water use and conservation management plan when a development application triggers it, and that's what's happened. And they are willing to move forward with the water use and conservation management plan, provided we file.
They kind of got us, haven't they? I mean, we want them to conform, but they want us to pay their bills so that they can increase their development in Denville. I'm not sure.
If you sack with this arm and PC, you do that a lot.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
Stormwater management plans tend to consider non-structural strategies and structural strategies. I would like to recommend that all conforming towns be required to only implement non-structural stormwater management strategies, which is swaling and moving things and diverting water properly in the ways that farmers have been doing for 100 years since the Dust Bowl. Structural strategies is burying cylinders of cement all over fields that tractors are going to hit, plows are going to hit, wasting land. You know, when we have to get rid of cement today, old cement, we have to hire a dumpster, pay an excessive fee, because old cement is a hazardous waste. So why in the world is stormwater management strategies ordering people to bury what is a hazardous waste? Dry wells will be tomorrow's oil tanks. I ask this council to not allow dry wells in the Highlands.
Comments. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this issue? Seeing none, we'll close. Any further council comments? Seeing none, we'll call this.
Councilmember Alston?
Yes.
Councilmember Carluccio?
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty?
Yes.
Councilmember Dressel?
Aye.
Councilmember Holtaway?
Aye.
Councilmember James?
Yes.
Councilmember Richco?
Yes.
Councilmember Savitage?
Yeah.
Councilmember Tiefen?
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden?
Yes.
Councilmember Walton?
Yes.
Chairman Riley?
Yes. And now it takes us to resolution approval of an initial assessment grant for the town of Boot in Morris County.
Okay.
Just in paper, I knew, but.
Yes. The town of Booton recently adopted a resolution to petition the council for plan conformance. That was on June 19th of this year. The town is 100% in the planning area, which is voluntary, as you know. First step is for the town to complete an initial assessment grant, which we authorized in January 2008, that will indicate that the work required by the town to conform to the RMP. The resolution is for a grant not to exceed $15,000. To date, just for your information, the Highlands Council has worked with 72 Highlands municipalities on this grant. as this is, again, a reimbursement grant, no funding is released until the staff has reviewed and approved the final report.
Motion, please.
Move it.
Second, please.
I'll second.
Thank you. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on this resolution only? Yes, ma'am.
Julia Summers, Executive Director of New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Boonton is where our office is. Matt Lurie, the mayor, is considered a friend. And we have been talking to him about doing this ever since he was elected. We're delighted that this is taking the next step. And we encourage him very much because we do think that they will end up conforming. Thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on this? Seeing none, close the public portion. Any further council comments? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Councilmember Alstead.
Yes.
Councilmember Carlucci.
Yes.
Councilmember Daugherty.
Yes.
Councilmember Dressler.
Yes.
Councilmember Holtzman.
Aye.
Councilmember James.
Yes.
Councilmember Richco.
Yes.
Councilmember Sebastian.
Yes.
Councilmember Tiefen.
Yes.
Councilmember Vizioli.
Yes.
Councilmember Bowden.
Yes.
Councilmember Walton.
Yes.
Chairman Riley.
Yes. That now takes us to public comment period.
One thing, on this memorandum that we're going to send to the water supply plant, I know we've agreed to include language that supports a water user fee to pay for just compensation to landowners that were impacted by the Highlands Act. My other thought is, I would like to suggest that we include language that supports an investment in infrastructure that reduces dependency on Highlands water. I think that we recognize that we're a net exporter of water. We're working very hard to conserve the water so that there's an appropriate amount that's used within the region and exported. They speak to the fact that they recognize there's a need to invest in infrastructure. I think that we should support that investment in infrastructure, and especially an investment in infrastructure that preserves the resources here in the Highlands region.
Council comments?
I'm opposed to this idea, absolutely. I think that we don't own the water up here, and the water is owned by the people and the state, and people have a right to drink water. They live in New Jersey, they have a right to drink water here. The residents, they have the same rights as all of us.
Okay,
for us to act as if we somehow should keep the Highlands water in the Highlands and not let it flow where nature sends it, or through an infrastructure system that delivers it to where the population is counter to what we're doing here at the Highlands. We're here to protect water so it can supply 2/3 of New Jersey with water. It's not just for the people here. It's for everybody in New Jersey who needs it.
And I can appreciate your remarks, Tracy, and I don't think I suggested that we should not be exporting, but I think that You would acknowledge that there are HARP-14s that are now negative in the Highlands region, correct?
Absolutely.
So my concern is if there are, which means that if there's somebody living in the Highlands in a HARP-14 that wants to do something that requires water, it would be hard for them to do that right now. So what I'm suggesting is if there's means by which we can invest in infrastructure that allows for better utilization of the water in the region, so that person who just happens to have lived in this HARP-14 with a negative water amount right now because they were born there won't be prohibited from being able to do something else with water. You know, right now, it impacts their lives. And so I'm not suggesting that we don't continue to support the rest of the state, but if there's infrastructure investments that can be made reasonably that help our region, I think we should be supporting that. Not at the expense of others. I've never suggested that anybody else should suffer for these investments.
That's a great idea.
I think Kurt is right. Part of the problem is that the cost of moving water from place to place is not properly reflected in the cost that people pay for water. So the people in Jersey City or Newark who are getting water from the islands, the cost of their water bill does not reflect the real cost of preserving and protecting and delivering that water. So that cost is unfairly burdened by the people who live in the Highlands and live out west. And any system of fairness, Tracy, yes, it requires that you share the water, but also requires you share the cost of that water. And right now, the state system of taxes and fees does not do that. And what Kurt is suggesting, I believe, and what I certainly support, and what we supported with a resolution, supporting water fees, proper allocation of those costs.
I'm not against a fee, I haven't said this against a fee. I'm opposing the concept of infrastructure that would keep water from going where it's going now. If we're talking about water conservation measures, they said that's part of the plan. I actually don't think it's strong enough. But I think, you know, the important purpose of the Water Supply Master Plan is supposed to be to ensure that we have enough water here in New Jersey.
And as far as the
Highlands are concerned, we've done the analysis that shows where we have water deficits, and we can't get blood from the stone. If we've already over-allocated a watershed, we're not going to be able to get water from the stone, you know, blood from the stone. So we need to properly manage that water, yes, so everybody will have enough to use. But we shouldn't properly, I wouldn't call properly managing that water, putting an infrastructure that would keep it here.
What I envision is perhaps there's a need for another reservoir. And perhaps that reservoir...
No, I'm speaking against that. I mean, we get 100 million gallons a day from the Delaware River. And so the people downstream in Camden don't get to take it out. I mean, there's a lot of questions here if you start looking at where the water's coming from. That water's taken from the Delaware River all the way across to the, you know, to the watersheds that should be fed by the Atlantic.
Kurt's suggesting to look into other resources of water. That's all he asked for.
He's talking about building new reservoirs. Absolutely.
Eventually,
not.
As one reservoir is another resource, yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Reservoirs
whether
are
it's
already
in the highlands or
we already have
the pilots.
We have reservoirs. We don't need to expand the ones we have. We need to properly manage what we are using. That's all.
We need to clean up
our water supply, our water quality problems in order to make more available. There's a lot of things we can do that we need to do. Building new reservoirs is not one of them. We only have a certain amount of precipitation. We only have a certain amount of hydrologic resources here.
Thank you, Jason. Can you put it, say exactly again what you would like?
I'm suggesting that we support the concept of investing in infrastructure to ensure that there's a future supply of water for the Highlands region as well as the state. That's what I'm saying. But we know that we are a net exporter of water from here, so if there's appropriate resources that can be constructed or improved that help increase the supply of water available in this region, I think we should be supporting that. Because I can tell you right now, it's just a borough. You know, it's a problem. Water is a problem there. We have a problem getting enough water there. We have a problem because of the water. They're not having sufficient waters. It limits the ability to increase the capacity of the sewer system, which limits the ability of buildings on Main Street to be converted into restaurants. So there's these excessive vacancies right now, and it's all related to infrastructure. Here's a village that is performing with the plan, that's right in the center of the Highlands, and there's challenges. And it's because of infrastructure, including water. All I'm saying is if there's appropriate improvements, let's support them so that we can help the towns that live here, that are here.
I'm saying I don't agree with the word infrastructure. I actually agree with this post that we need to have better stormwater management, recognize it as a resource, recharge our aquifers and groundwater as a result of those. We need to have those methods. We need to have our forests intact. We need to do all the things that we're talking about as management practices here in the Highlands in the RMP in order to better utilize the water that lands on the ground. And that is not by building infrastructure. Okay. It's not going to ever be answered by more structural.
Thank you, Mr. Lichfield. Let's pull a board real quick. You have an issue with this going down this comment? No? Mr. Vizioli?
That's a good phrase. I'm good.
No.
I'm live.
Yes.
Are you taking a vote?
I'm polling the board. We didn't take a vote on any of these.
I see both arguments are validity, and I see Chester needs water. The only way to get it, I don't know, is through pipes. Maybe that's not a bad idea. I'm not sure. I'm not sure on this one.
Well, by no means is it a binding policy.
It's not a policy.
It's a suggestion to go to the
recommendation.
But
yes.
I think that as council, we need,
I think it's going to make a difference either way, so let's go ahead with what you did.
I'm not trying to be controversial.
At this point in time, we'll take the meeting to the public portion.
Give me a chair. Better example than the public.
At this point in time, we'll open it up to the public. Would anybody in the public wish to be heard on any issue? A reminder that it is a 3-minute time.
Julia Summers, New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Perhaps the flip side of the conversation that you just had, and something that the Water Supply Master Plan really doesn't address well, barely at all, is conservation. And though it doesn't really speak to the kinds of things that they should be recommending that we do, the people who use that potable water, which is the biggest chunk of the water that is going out from the highlands, is being used for potable water. The cheapest, most effective way is for us to conserve. So, not having seen your comments, the council's comments, if the council can also talk about conservation, you're actually going to do much better in addressing Mr. Allstead's issues by encouraging conservation than by anything else that you could possibly do. So, I would request that you, as we will, include comments about conservation. And request leadership, frankly, from DEP. They never talk about conservation, and now is the time for them to do that. That would be just great. Thank you.
Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Yes, sir. You guys get a fight over? Yes,
Deborah Post, harmed property owner, Chester Township. The HDC estimator tool disappeared from the Highlands Council website a while ago. I'm not sure exactly how long ago, maybe more than a year. It was actually a useful tool. Even I found the results reasonable. Why did it disappear? Your staff tells me that they want to look at HDC allocations on a case-by-case basis. Case-by-case. Gee, that sounds like arbitrary and capricious. Case by case, so we can apply nepotism when we need to. And of course, it's much easier to screw the clueless elderly person if the data isn't available. I opened the 47 data items in the underlying database. Here they are. I will spare reading them to you. My OPRA was denied. I was told the data didn't exist. I took these 47 items off of a Highlands Council document regarding the database. How could have I known what these data items were with the specificity that's in this OPRA if I didn't have a Highlands Council document in my files that proved the items do exist? So don't deny my OPRA saying something doesn't exist. I intend to file a legal challenge to this OPRA denial, and this council will pay my lawyer bills when I win. So possibly this council should direct staff to provide me with the information that I OPRA'd. That was point one. Point two, the RMP speaks to agriculture and tourism as the panacea to economic growth in the Highlands. I would like to request that this council make embracing this goal and actively supporting agriculture and tourism a requirement of conforming plans in the towns that actually conform and penalize those that do not. Please, here's an idea. Don't give them grants. If they ask for a grant and they've treated their farms and their tourist industry badly, deny them their grant. Specifically, towns need to adequately fund traffic control, a public service, and roads during peak agritourist fall traffic season. Towns must also approve without unreasonable hassle and hurdles the needs of farms. You've tried to preserve all the farmland here. I saw your precious open space that we take care of. We should not have to jump through hurdles and spend fortunes when we want to build a new barn to expand our business. Towns must honor the RFP and please refuse grants. I think, and if you can figure out a better way to penalize them, do it.
Thank you. Any comments? Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Please raise your hand. Ms. Mann.
Well, Mr.
Fry, New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I guess I don't expect an answer right now, but I really would like to know to what extent the Highlands Council has been consulted with in the preparation of this water supply plan. Because our impression from reviewing it is that the deficits that are found in the Huck 14 watersheds in the Highlands are masked in the results that the plan comes out with for the larger, much larger watershed, the watershed management areas. And that the standards that the council, that the water supply plan is using for protection of ecological values and stuff are much lower than what are in the Highlands plans. Give me those books there. I mean, you know, the Highlands has this. It has the two technical documents, the water supply and the water quality documents. And there is nothing at this level of detail or quality in this water supply plan. So I hope that that you are defending your turf. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard about anything? Please raise your hand. Yes, sir.
Yes, my name is George Casa. I have a fly fishing business in California.
Move that thing up for you.
I took a somewhat different initial interpretation of Mr. Alstead's recommendation for including the infrastructure problem in the council's comments. If I understand all that I read about the loss that is incurred from the reservoir to the final user, in New Jersey it's somewhere in the order of 15% of whatever is provided just doesn't get there. If two-thirds of the state's water is being provided by the Highlands, I think the Highlands Council is entirely justified and, in fact, maybe ought to make it a primary concern to advocate on behalf of the maintenance and improvement of statewide infrastructure, not just in the Highlands. So I took the reference to be more broad-based, possibly, than Tracy did, but I think it's an excellent opportunity for an agency that should have some say in what happens to the water that it's providing to the rest of the state. Thank you.
And I think the statewide infrastructure aspect was addressed. Thank you.
Well said.
Would anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue? Yes, sir.
Thanks for letting me speak here. My name's Hank Clump. I own 150 acres in the Highlands Preservation Area. The Save the Water land grab almost 13 years ago continues to be an ongoing disgrace called the Highlands Act. The New Jersey Water Supply Authority gets water supply for free, while I alone with others no longer have any equity in our property. We are paying the price for the golf courses in the Raritan Basin system to water these lush grass, paying peanuts a day for this water. The Hamilton Farm Golf Club in Gladstone has applied for a renew of their contract with an increase to the millions of gallons per year, and if approved, would be in place through June 2027. That's 10 years. The water would come from within the Raritan Basin system and used for golf course irrigation purposes. Was anyone on this council against the granting of this application? Were any environment against this? Or does anyone on the council question the waste of water? In 2004, McGreevy signed the poorly written Highlands Act, convincing so many people that it would be saved the water for the babies that would soon be dehydrated. Water is being wasted. The Highlands Act is a joke, political and not scientific. No one can find any scientific study that put my property in the Highlands Preservation Area. And I would be laughing at the act if it were not hurting so many and so badly. Thanks very much for letting me speak. I really appreciate that.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue, please raise your hand. Seeing, yes, sir.
My name is David Shope. I have a farm in Lebanon Township. One thing I noticed that the DEP people did not mention was the fact that trees are the biggest users of water as composed, compared to golf courses, grass, etc. So if you want more water, cut down the trees. The Quabbin Reservoir in Massachusetts has proven that. They were the process of considering developing another reservoir. And when they cleared 400 acres of trees, they didn't have to do it. The maximum groundwater recharge is when deciduous trees are dormant. All eight hucks flow into another huck. And if you think the people in Newark or Elizabeth or wherever care about huck 14, quote, deficits up here, you're mistaken. They have no deficit. They turn on the tap and out it comes. And the HUC 14 deficits are created by people who don't exist. That is to say, when the DEP says four people per household and the U.S. Census Bureau, which is charged with taking the census by the Constitution, says 2.6, 1.4 people don't exist. And yet, their water consumption and septic effluent are considered in your calculations up here in the Highlands. It's just another one of the passel of lies that are used to justify this act. While you're talking to the North Jersey District Water Supply Commission, ask them if they've run across the study that says $30.2 billion will be saved in water treatment costs. That seems to have been, and the Highlands Task Force seized on this and used it as a justification for this act. I think you'll find it's still amongst the missing. And the reason it's amongst the missing is because it's a fraud. It never existed. This state is the third most corrupt state in the nation by those people who manage these things. First is Louisiana. Second is Illinois. New Jersey gets a bronze medal by being number three. Congratulations. And I'm sure the state could do better.
They are.
You know, the next governor, I'm sure, will put us over the top. We'll bump Illinois out of number two, I have no doubt. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Anybody else in the public wish to be heard on any issue, please raise your hand.
Good.
See, now close the public portion. The motion to adjourn.
So moved. Aye.